Welcome to the Government Contracts Legal Roundup, a podcast focused on important developments facing government contractors and grant recipients. This podcast is put on by the Jenrin Block Government Contracts Practice Group, and I'm David Robbins, co-chair of the group, and it's my pleasure to continue to host this podcast. I am joined today by my partner, Jen Larson, who does a lot of work in sort of the government contracts meets insurance recovery space. Granted, not just government contracts, but that's what we're here to talk about today. Before we talk to Jen, though, I do want to give people a quick update on commercial item contracting. A recent DFARS amendment restricts DoD contracting officers' ability to include non-commercial FAR and DFARS clauses in new solicitations for commercial products and services. The new rule also curtails the types of clauses that DoD prime contractors can flow down to subcontractors for commercial products and services. Previously, the DFARS vaguely permitted prime contractors to flow down additional clauses above and beyond mandatory flowdowns. Under the amended rule, only mandatory flowdowns are permitted. Additional DFARS amendments are expected as part of a broader initiative to clarify the rules for commercial subcontracts, including the much-anticipated definition of the term subcontract. All right, let's get back to something that I view as much more interesting. Look, when I joined Jenrin Block in early 2020, pandemic addled, not really knowing anybody yet, but we dove right in. We started working together. One of the people I was really fortunate to meet and work with early is Jen Larson, my partner based on the West Coast. And Jen's work has just blown me away. Just so much tremendous recovery of insurance proceeds for government contractors. And I know your practice goes beyond that, but we're here to focus on government contractors today, that I just thought it would be helpful to alert the broader community, our listeners of this podcast, to what you do and how they can be mindful of ways to perhaps increase recovery opportunities. But first and foremost, Jen, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. Thank you for that wonderful introduction, David. And hello, listeners. My name is Jan. I am one of the co-chairs of Jenrin Block's Insurance Recovery Group based in Los Angeles. In a nutshell, we work with our policyholder side clients of all shapes and sizes and sorts to resolve disputes with their insurance companies when those disputes arise, but also more generally to counsel them on a variety of different insurance issues that come up in the everyday course of their business.
So what should government contractors, what should they think about with respect to insurance recovery? And here's why I ask the question, right? I've come up through government contracts heavy law firms. This isn't a subject that we talked about, maybe because it was reserved for other law firms, or it just wasn't something we talked about internally. So just really generally, when should we think about you and your practice area and just how to address this issue entirely?
So that's a good question. And I do think that Jenner is a little bit uniquely positioned among large law firms because we are on the policyholder side of things, whereas many other large law firms tend to represent the insurance companies. So we do have a bit of a unique profile in that sense. Look, everybody has insurance needs, whether you are a government contractor or some other type of business. I like to think about insurance as a source of recovery that brings money back in for something that is causing money to go out of the company. So it could be any number of things. It could be damage to a piece of property that the company owns for purposes of their business that has had some impact to it and that's covered by insurance. It could be a interruption to the company's business based on a cyber incident. It could be something like a response to a subpoena or an investigation. So it's really a broad range of things that insurance can respond to. But the key part is you're helping to bring money back in.
That makes good sense. I guess we're more familiar with sort of the government contracts claims when your scope changes or you need money back from your government customer. But this makes good sense to me. We're in a pretty rapidly consolidating and have been in a rapidly consolidating market in the government contract space for a number of years now. And I know we've worked together on a few things involving, for example, reps and warranties insurance in the transactional context. Is there any unique magic to the transactional context? Is there something else people should think about post-closing or during integration if a problem arises?
Yes. So reps and warranties insurance is actually a really unique product that didn't exist a number of years ago. It's a relatively new product in the marketplace, and it helps foster transactions because it basically replaces the ability, the necessity, of the seller to indemnify certain things. Instead, the reps and warranties insurer steps in to provide indemnities as part of the transaction. And it gives the buyer the ability to go to the reps and warranties insurer to make recoveries after the transaction closes if some issue arises, as opposed to having to go back to the seller. And there are, you know, a variety of reasons you may not want to have to go back to the seller after a transaction closes. So the reps and warranties insurance really serves a unique function in the transactional space.
And so people should think of you, of course, when problems arise, when they're looking for recovery. Do you do, and I actually don't know the answer to this, do you do any proactive policy review? Do you have the right policies? Do they say the right things? Gap analysis, whatever that looks like. Is that something you'll do?
Yes, that's a key part of our practice. And we work very closely with insurance brokers. So the big ones that folks may think of frequently are Marsh, Aon, Willis, but there are obviously, you know, many smaller brokers out there as well. We work with the brokers and with the policyholder clients to look at their existing insurance portfolio, determine whether it's adequate for the types of risk that are faced by that particular company. We review the policies that are in place and provide suggestions as to enhancements that might be made to those policies when it comes time to renew them. So that's very much a part of our practice as well as the dispute resolution.
Understood. So the one thing that I witnessed in recent years that absolutely blew me away, and obviously we're de-identifying all of this, but absolutely hot and heavy investigation, really costly after an acquisition. And you managed to recover all the expenses associated with our work. And it blew me away. I've never, and perhaps it's my own ignorance, I just hadn't seen that before. And talk about value to the client. You know, I can only do so much to brag about you. Are there other fun wins that are worth, in the de-identified fashion, of course, telling our listeners about so they know how to think about this going forward?
Well, sticking with that one particular matter that you're referring to and remaining anonymous, obviously, I think the key there was that Jenner had actually worked on the underlying transaction and I worked on the reps and warranties insurance piece of that. And so as part of that work, we were able to ensure that the policy we were putting in place had some really significant and key provisions in it that allowed us to then recover when a claim arose because we had ensured that, for example, Jenner was already an approved set of counsel under that policy so that fees that were incurred to investigate a loss, for example, would be covered. So that's just an example, I think, of, you know, knowing the client and knowing their business from sort of beginning to end can be helpful.
Got it. All right. So as I hear that, and I'm trying to translate it for people who may not play in this space daily, if folks are acquiring assets that either may have a little risk or may just not be as mature in terms of systems, et cetera, then it probably makes more sense not just to go and get reps and warranties insurance, if that's sort of deal, but also talk to an insurance lawyer to make sure you got the right thing to protect you and protect the downside risk post-closure. Do I have that right?
Yes, that's exactly right. Typically, you would want to look for a corporate team that had an insurance specialist on that team in addition to all the other specialties.
Got it. Well, everybody listening, you've been very kind to listen to us talk about this. And again, it's just born of, I hadn't been aware that this sort of service existed. And I know in my career prior to coming to Jenner and Block, there are a number of clients of the firms where I've worked generally who could have used this service. And I just thought it was almost a public service to get this out there. If I've misunderstood and everybody knew this already, well, now you know a great lawyer in this space to go along with your knowledge. Otherwise, I hope we have added to your knowledge. Thanks for joining us for the Government Contracts Legal Roundup. If you have any questions or need more information about anything substantive relating to government contracts, I can be reached at 202-639-6040 or drobbins@jenner.com. And Jen, why don't you tell people how to reach you? Because I can't answer insurance questions to save my life.
Sure, David. I can be reached at 213-239-2273 or janlarson@jenner.com.
Thanks so much. We'll see you next time.